Okay, well, I'll make some comments about things we've been dealing with and how the meeting's going and so on. And then with this small group, I think we'll just take questions one at a time around the table, and we should have time for at least a couple each, and we'll see how we go. Let me say, first of all, then, I think the meeting has started well. I think there's a good atmosphere. It's pretty relaxed. I think, people are aware that there are tensions and issues, important issues that we have to face, but there is a good feeling about the meeting, I think. I don't think there are the levels of anxiety, perhaps, that have accompanied people arriving at the last couple of primates meetings. So that's good. And I think the shape of the program leading into us has allowed us to worship together in a number of locations and at some length, and people have settled down well into the meeting. We began, as you know, yesterday with a quiet morning led by Archbishop Rowan. He gave an address based on the third chapter of the book of Revelation, which are three letters to three churches, which in various ways were in some sort of bother or trouble. And he invited us to reflect on the degree to which those letters to those churches were a reflection of the life in our own churches. And so that was a kind of salutary beginning, I guess, in some ways. But he also was sure to point us to the notes of promise that ended each of those letters and encouraged us to make sure we were conscious of God's word of promise to us as churches. Now, who's here? Everyone, all the primates are here except for the primate of the Sudan, who's still, I think, on the way and might get here. There's some hope that he might be here tomorrow. He's still having difficulties with passports and visas and things. Unfortunately, the primate of the Philippines, Edward Malakdan, was refused a visa and so was unable to be here. There are three apologies. The primates of South India, North India and Pakistan are all apologies. They all had unavoidable commitments and so aren't here. There, by my reckoning, there are eight primates who are here for the first time. I'll just identify those for you. David Moxon from Aotearoa, New Zealand and Polynesia. Though he's been a primate for some time and has attended other international meetings as primates, you're aware the system in New Zealand, they actually have three co-primates and they take turns to attend international meetings. So David, this is David's first primates meeting. Bishop Paul Sarka from Bangladesh is here for the first time. Fred Hiltz, the primate of Canada, is here for the first time. Albert Chama is here for the first time from Central Africa. Now, Albert is the senior bishop of that province. He's not actually primate because they haven't had their election yet. And there are three people in a similar position.
C-H-A-L-M-A-R?
C-H-A-L-M-A. No L. C-H-A-M-A. C-H-A-M-A. Bishop Charles Koete, K-O-E-T-E, from Melanesia, is here for the first time, minus his luggage, I think, still, unfortunately. And again, Charles is the senior bishop of the province of Melanesia. They are having their election in March, I think. The primate of Myanmar, Stephen Tan Mint U, is here for the first time. Yes, I can. Stephen with a PH. Tan, T-H-A-N. Mint, M-Y-I-N-T. U, double O. The new primate of Southern Africa, Thabo Makoba, is here for the first time. the new Prime Minister of Tanzania, Valentino Makiwa. And Errol Brooks from the West Indies. He's the third, who's the senior bishop from the West Indies, but they're awaiting the election for their primate. So that's the roll call. 34 primates are here, if my count is right, and we might get to 35 if the primate of the Sudan arrives. Yes?
34, including Johnson Tonga.
I guess that's right. Yes. I think so. Okay. The agenda, if I can just run through the agenda so you know what's coming. The plan for each morning is basically the same. So 7:15 morning prayer followed by the Eucharist, 8 o'clock breakfast, 9:15 Bible study, and I'll say another word about the Bible studies in a moment, 10:15 morning tea and coffee, then 11 o'clock is a session until lunch, and then we work through the afternoons and the evenings. Today we dealt with, and I'll come back and make some comments about this, we had presentations from five primates before lunch, focusing on what impact has the current situation in the Anglican Communion had on your province's mission priorities. So we had five presentations and then small group discussions arising from those presentations, and that went on into this afternoon session. After morning tea today, we've been looking at the covenant, and I'll come back and say a bit about that.
Could you tell us who the primates were who spoke?
Yeah, I will. Okay. Later on. I'll come back and say a bit more about that. And tonight we're looking at Zimbabwe. And that my intention is to ask Albert Chama and Thabo Makoba to come and meet with you tomorrow night to talk about Zimbabwe. Mm. Tomorrow, the same pattern in the morning. The late morning session will be looking at a report from the Windsor Continuation Group. After lunch, we're looking at a report from the Theological Education Working Group, and the second part of the afternoon will be a nuts and bolts business session, the agenda for which hasn't been identified yet. And then in the evening we'll be looking at global warming. Wednesday, the morning routine is the same. The late morning session will be looking at a proposal to coordinate Anglican relief and development, and we'll have the first input to the primates from the communique drafting group. And Wednesday we'll meet together before lunch. When the primates break for lunch, I'll come and meet with you, because we're out in the afternoon, so rather than trying to gather everyone together, we're going to visit the library. I don't know. You'll have to ask the organisers about that.
Okay.
Thursday, same routine in the morning. The late morning session is a second go at the communique. And then there'll be a session on Christian responses to the current global financial crisis. In the afternoon, there's a session focusing on patterns of communion meetings, and that will include a look at the agenda for the Anglican Consultative Council meeting in Jamaica in May, and some reflections on Lambeth conferences and the future of Lambeth conferences growing out of discussions that were held at the recent Lambeth conference. After afternoon tea, there's an hour or so just to pick up any items of unfinished business that need to be dealt with, and then we're planning to meet with you with the Archbishop of Canterbury at 5:30 on Thursday, and that will be it. So that's the programme as it stands. I should emphasise that that's flexible. You know, the primates are in charge of their own programme, and if they decide to change that or things come up the order or the order changes, then that will happen. But that's what's planned at the moment.
Can you identify the communication drafting group? Who are the members of that?
Yes, I think I can. The chair of it is Archbishop Bernard Tatahuri. I do have the spelling. It starts with N. Now, here's the Bishop of Burundi. Here we go. N-T-A-H-O-T-U-R-I. And then the members are Archbishop Alan Harper from Ireland. Archbishop Ian Ernest from the Indian Ocean. There are five. I've got three, haven't I?
Carlos?
Yes, thank you. It is Carlos. What's Carlos? Carlos Tush Porter from Mexico. Is it him? Yeah, Burundi, that's Bernard. He's chairing it. Gregory is the secretary to it. I sit in on it so that I've got an idea of how it's developing. I'm not a member of the group, but I sit in on it. And there's a fifth archbishop. It's not Singapore, no.
There's one missing.
Yeah, there is.
We're saying there's one missing. There was one from each of the from Asia groups, except Asia. Africa, the Americas, Europe.
Is it Hong Kong?
I don't think so. Let me check that for you. The group hasn't met yet. It's meeting. It's meeting. In fact, they're all having dinner together, I think, while I'm sitting here, so you'll be able to see. I'll find that out for you and get Darren to get back to you. I can't pick it up just at the moment. I don't think it is John Chu. I think John Chu was on it last time, but not this time. Sorry about that. Okay, today's program. as I said, five primates presented. The primates who presented were Archbishop Stephen from Myanmar, Thabo Makoba from Southern Africa, Catherine Jeffert-Shorey from the States, Fred Hiltz from Canada, and Henry Arombi from Uganda. And it was a very interesting discussion, and their presentations were very different, as you'd expect, because their contexts are so different. And one of the things that came through time and time again was the degree to which context influences mission priorities, and also the degree to which context affects the way in which the current communion situation is affecting the life of the church, as well as mission priorities. And there was a huge variety of responses, going from one culture where the bishops had been in discussion about these issues, but because the in that cultural setting, the understanding of marriage and human sexuality was very traditional, with little, if any, variation from that traditional view, these issues hadn't percolated down into the grassroots life of the church. And in fact, the bishops were concerned about what might happen if they did, in terms of unsettling church life and the damage that could be done. So it's not an urgent priority in that province. And in fact, the bishops thought that might create some space where other members of the Anglican Communion could meet in order to engage in reconciliation kind of processes. In another of the cultures, matters of human sexuality were a real live issue and have been for more than a decade in the culture and society, but the church is not seen to be driving that at all. These issues have been very much on the mind of the courts and government, but the church wasn't seen to be responsible for having provoked or enlivened these issues at all. So huge, huge diversity. In all of the presentations, there was a very clear expression of commitment to mission and a huge variety of ways in which God's mission was being pursued in the light of the local challenges. It became very clear that issues of human sexuality are not a challenge for Anglicans only. They are certainly there for a number of cultures and societies in the broadest possible terms, but also for other churches. It became clear in the small group discussions and the plenary discussions the extent to which the way in which Scripture is interpreted is also affected by local circumstances and the kind of spectacles that we wear as we come to the Scriptures. And some very powerful analogies were drawn. The one that stays in my mind most strongly, I guess, was Thabo's reflection on the South African context, where he reflected on the divisive debate around the ethics of armed struggle to overthrow apartheid. He said that that was a real life and death issue for Christians in South Africa at the time, and yet the church managed to stay together through all of that and continued to serve the needs of its people. So a wide-ranging and very interesting discussion. It also raised the question of the role of the primates in the current situation, and that may be something that we return to because it came up again in the discussion about the covenant, which was the one we had just before we broke. John Chu, who's a member of the Covenant Design Group, made a presentation about where the covenant is up to. It's a bit difficult to say much about it because, as you know, we're waiting for the next draft, which has not yet been released. The Covenant Design Group is receiving responses to the St Andrew's draft from around the Communion up until the 9th of March. That's the deadline for responses. Then the group will meet and produce a new draft to be considered by the Anglican Consultative Council. So all the primates are well aware of that, and in a sense we're having this discussion without the latest information before us. But I think it's fair to say there has been a general warming to the possibilities that might be afforded by a covenant. And at the same time, there's been perhaps increasing realism about what a covenant can and can't do. I think it's also fair to say that there's probably a pulling back from language about sanctions and teeth. One contribution this afternoon really questioned whether using the language of teeth is actually an appropriate form of language for the body of Christ to be using. So there's a growing appreciation, I think, that what we're talking about in the covenant is a framework for koinonia, for fellowship, for communion, for relationships. And if there is a failure in koinonia, relationships, communion, the way that such a failure needs to be addressed is by investing further in communion and koinonia and relationships, not by hitting people over the head with sticks. So, as I say, they're very much impressions about where that discussion's going. The provinces seem to be committed to participating in the process of developing a covenant. But no one, of course, can say that they're committed to a particular covenant because we haven't seen it. So we wait what happens in May. I think that's probably all I can tell you about what's happened, so I'm happy to try to respond to your questions. Matthew first.
Matthew Davis, Episcopal News Service. Have there been any discussions about the new proposed entity, which some people are calling an emerging province in North America, or any efforts to add it to the agenda?
No efforts to add it to the agenda. It's probably been referred to in passing in the small group discussions in table groups, but there's been no plenary discussion about it. So people are aware of it, it's there, but it hasn't really come into focus.
Is there an expectation that it will arise?
Nobody has declared such an expectation. Whether if people expect it and haven't declared it, I don't know about it. Reza?
Oh, I don't have a question at the moment. I'm going to pass.
Paul?
In Canada, one of our major concerns is about cross-border interventions. And I wondered if that had been part of the discussion and how you think the primates might deal with that question.
Yes, it certainly has. The three moratoria were part of the discussion this morning. As you know, the primates have repeatedly called for the moratoria to be observed, and that was part of the communication from Lambeth as well. And there are concerns that the moratoria are not being observed. But that will be followed through when we come to the Windsor Continuation Group's report, I'm sure. So there'll be more about that. Colin?
Does the listening process feature anywhere in the agenda this week?
It doesn't have a slot identified for it on the agenda, but it was part of the discussions today, and it also, I'm sure, will be part of the Windsor Continuation Group's report. David?
Yes. If you have a covenant that is basically relational and koinonia, rather than built on, say, dogma or doctrine or truth, how can you have discipline of anybody if, in fact, you build it on what seems to me to be a rather shaky foundation? How can one province and another discipline if there's no overarching theological formation to hold it together? Where is discipline going to come from? How do you discipline?
Well, I wouldn't agree with, the premise that there's no theological framework or content. The drafts we've seen so far do point to some of the key reference points in Anglican tradition and fundamental Anglican frameworks. The creeds, the sacraments, the scriptures, first of all, of course, the historic episcopate, the things you find in the Lambeth Quadrilateral and the historic frameworks for the church. So that's there,
right,
and they're reference points. But the question of discipline, what sanctions can be applied and so on, is... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made some comments about it earlier. It's interesting. If I reflect on Australia's situation, for example, one of the questions each province has been asked is, how would a covenant be adopted? How would it be put in place in your province? Australia has done some work on this, and it's not dissimilar in other places. There are three ways it could happen in Australia. One is it could be added to the Constitution. That is unlikely to happen. The Constitution we have now was 65 years or so in the making, and it gets changed very, very rarely, so adding the content of the covenant to it is very unlikely to happen, and it probably wouldn't command the necessary majorities for it to happen. A second possibility is that it could be passed as a canon through the General Synod. Now, the group that's been working on this in Australia thinks that is unlikely too, because it would then have to be adopted in each diocese in Australia in order for it to come into effect in each diocese, and probably some dioceses wouldn't adopt it, so it wouldn't happen. So what's most likely to happen is it will be passed by a resolution of the General Synod. And my hunch is, I mean, depending on what's in the final content, my hunch is that that probably would happen, but then it has no legal force. So it really is a moral obligation. Now, we have been thinking about the covenant in terms of each participating church making a gift to the other participating churches by agreeing to self-limit its autonomy in some ways. In other words, not proceeding on divisive issues without first consulting and entering into deep conversation with the other member churches. Now, that if a church willingly enters into that mutual self-gift with other churches, then presumably they will observe that the obligation they've made to do that. And if they don't, if there's a failure in relationship at that level, as I said earlier, what remedy is required to restore a failure in mutual respect and courtesy? And that is investment in mutual respect and courtesy, not... I mean, the only sanction that possibly could be applied is non-invitation to meetings, and you have to ask yourself, is that going to affect the healing of relationships and so on? So this is the... There is, I think I'm right in reading things as they stand, there is a pulling back from kind of stick-over-the-head sanctions and a deeper exploration of the character of relationships that will be required to make a covenant work.
Stick-over-the-head what?
Sanctions.
Sanctions, yeah. George?
Too far. One, you mentioned hitting people over the head. Were you... What sort of stakes, and we're talking about anyone in particular, that's a joke question. You spoke of teeth and sanctions, and that there was a general sense of pulling back from that original language. Was it the primates who were pulling back, or this new draft that was pulling back?
Now, I think Lambeth pulled back. There was very strong concern expressed at Lambeth about that kind of language. I think that same concern is evident among the primates, many of whom who were at Lambeth, and I think the Covenant Design Group will have to take that on board and reflect it in what they produce.
So, may I just clarify so I understand you? So the Covenant presentation by Archbishop Chu was not received as a pulling back from pulling back, but rather the environment of Lambeth and the primate's concerns.
Yes.
Where the pulling back was coming.
Archbishop Chu's presentation was largely introducing the Lambeth commentary, summarising the Lambeth commentary for the primates and looking at the process going forward. So the Lambeth commentary you have. What I'm reflecting to you is my impression of the discussion this afternoon and as I read what's going on. And I think... I mean, there are mixed views, of course. This isn't unanimous. You know, there are still some, I think, who would like to press further the discipline question and see what shape that might take. But I think overall there is, as I've described it, a pulling back or a questioning of whether sanctions and enforcement and teeth, A, can be affected, and B, is it the right way to go in terms of the character of relationships we're trying to build. Kevin?
When we got done with the Dar es Salaam, it was a Dar es Salaam communique and given by the archbishops. Largely that's been unanswered as far as I can tell. There's been discussions and stuff, but did the primates sit down and say, hey, let's talk about what happened in Dar es Salaam and revisit any of that, or is that just off the table completely?
No, it's not off the table. It's all there in the background. It's part of people's awareness and consciousness. It's certainly prompted the primates to reflect on what kind of communication we want to have coming out of this meeting. It will be there when we come to look at the Windsor Continuation Group report and the ongoing Windsor process. So it's not off the table, but the questions of how effective have the moratoria been, to what extent they're being observed, questions about should we continue to press those things or do we have to stop and take another look? That's all there in the melting pot, I think.
Can I do a quick follow-up? At the end of Lambeth, Archbishop Ron Williams kind of gave a summary of all this discussion. A lot of it was discussed that the archbishops have too much voice or say, or are meeting and making vast proclamations amongst the communion, and that needs to stop. Are the archbishops aware of this type of feeling within the communion,
yes,
or is that just something specific to Lambeth?
Yes, no, the archbishops are aware of it, and that was mentioned actually in one of the contributions to a plenary this afternoon. It's a bit of a bind because there are Lambeth Conference resolutions going back to 78 and 88 which encourage the primates to be more proactive and so on. But parts of the communion are very conscious of and sensitive to the need for the whole church to be involved in these decisions, including clergy and lay people, and that it certainly shouldn't be left to primates. So, for example, one of the earlier moves to make the primates ex officio members of the ACC has really lapsed because it just hasn't got support all around the communion. There is a role for primates, but it needs to be addressed sensitively. And the primates meeting is one of the four instruments of communion, and how the four instruments relate to each other is one of the things that the Archbishop of Canterbury continues to urge us to reflect on as we try to shape structures that will carry the communion forward. We'll try.
So it's lapsed, the movement from to make the primates part of the ACC.
My understanding is that's right. There were three constitutional changes proposed by the last ACC meeting,
yeah,
and two of them are going forward and one's lapsed, and I think that's the one that's lapsed because it just hasn't had the support the other two were, one was a kind of technical matter to make the ACC a charity, an incorporated charity in the UK,
mm-hmm,
and the second one was to make the members of the joint standing committee ex officio members of the ACC, and I think that is going forward because that has received support,
mm-hmm,
but not all the primates.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Matthew?
There have been some mixed messages on perhaps what being said to the primates about relating to the media. I'm hearing from some people that they've been told that they shouldn't speak to the media, and others have said that's not the case.
Same rumour went around Lambeth. What we've said to the primates is there is an official spokesperson who's appointed to deal with the media, so if you shouldn't feel obliged to. The media, you know, are being catered for. If you wish to speak to the media, you're free to do so. I indicated to the primates that some of you were interested in kind of domestic issues, and they certainly should feel free to speak about domestic issues. But in terms of communication officially from the meeting, that there was a mechanism set up to deal with that. Reza?
I've got my question back in my brain, but I just want to follow up on what Matthew said when he asked that from the Guardian. I appreciate that you want sort of the discussions in the meeting to be kept private. But then we're getting it through a filter. So, I mean, for example, if I were to ask you what the strongest concern was about the covenant, would you tell us verbatim who said it? Or no, what was said rather than who said it? I mean, what was the worst thing that was said about the covenant in its current form?
I'm not sure, actually.
But you see, that's the kind of thing I would like to know. What was the best thing that was said? What was the worst thing that was said? When you talked about the presentations as well, I'm trying to guess out which primates are, were describing their culture. And it's kind of, I've got a pretty good idea, but I'm not sure. So that's just
One of the things we want the primates to be free to engage with each other,
mm,
and to move and grow and think and change. I mean, that's one of the reasons for coming together.
Mm.
One of the difficulties is if very specific and particular views are attached to particular primates, and that's published all around the world,
yeah,
then what they do is spend the next 3 days,
mm,
defending that position instead of interacting in a way which might allow people,
yeah,
to move and change.
But for example,
so,
if they were here talking about the presentations that they made, having already expressed their presentations and viewpoints to fellow primates,
yeah,
then I don't really understand what the harm was in that.
Well,
do you see?
This is the way the primates have decided to go about things.
Okay.
So they had a discussion about how they wanted to handle the media, and this is how they
okay
decided to do it.
Okay. My question then. there's a pulling back from sanctions, or there's a sense that people are moving away from the idea of having sanctions, and you know, having a covenant without teeth is not really helpful language, and you know, they don't.
But let's be clear, that's my sense of it. That's how I read it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your sense is that there is a stepping away from the need to have sanctions, and that people are questioning whether it's appropriate to talk about covenant with teeth. And you discussed the situation in Australia, saying that the most likely scenario was that General Synod would pass a resolution, and that the discipline, or not the punishment, but the action taken if somebody were to violate, one of the moratoria, for example, maybe, was not being invited to meeting. Do you think, then, that people are pulling away from sanctions because if the worst thing that happens is you're not invited to a meeting, they can still do what they like?
Now, I think it's to do with the issues of desirability and workability. I think there is a theological understanding about the character of communion and relationships, and that's about building trust and self-limiting as mutual gift. And that in that context, you know, talk about teeth and sanctions and punishment is not really appropriate. The second issue is about workability, and it's not just Australia. I mean, I think is that the Secretary General of the Church of England has said the Church of England could not possibly grant authority to an outside body. That would go against the very nature of the established church in England, and it's constitutionally impossible to do it. Other places will not yield authority to an outside group, and that would be true of several dioceses in Australia, which I don't need to name. My own is probably one of them, but they will not yield authority to an external body to have control over them. So in terms of workability, it's probably not going to happen either. So they're the reasons. Paul?
The question about the Windsor Continuation Group, their report is coming tomorrow. Who's going to make that presentation? Will we be able to get copies of the report?
The Archbishop of Canterbury has asked that report in particular be kept confidential this week, so that the primates have a chance to really work through it themselves. And the Archbishop told us his current intention is to make the report available at the end of this week publicly, once the primates have discussed it.
This, just a follow up to that, this is a final report. You mentioned, though, about an ongoing Windsor process, and I don't know if there's something in what you said there of what the future of this is.
No, I wasn't trying to be oblique. Okay. That group will report. I guess if that's its final report and it says so, and the Archbishop of Canterbury accepts that and doesn't ask them to do anything else, then that group's done its work and it's finished and gone. And then it's a question of how we carry forward, you know, what's come out of Lambeth, what comes out of this meeting, what's come from them, how we move forward with that to the ACC. So whether we keep talking about the Windsor process or whether we say, well, Windsor's done its, you know, that piece of work is done and now we're moving forward through the ACC and what have you, I think that remains to be seen. Colin?
A question about Holy Communion. At Dromonton, a significant number of primates absented themselves from communion and wouldn't receive. At Dar es Salaam, a smaller number, 7, I think. Has communion been celebrated this time, and did any primates not receive communion? And I ask that in the context of an English person observing the projections that are made onto the Episcopal Church as the bad boy or woman in all that goes on, which has seemed very unfair to me, considering that Canada does its own thing, and certainly England does its own thing in terms of breaking moratoria, but in a more subtle way. Do you think that projection has diminished, is the question. Is there less hostility towards the Episcopal Church, towards Catherine Jerry Shorey,
Let me just respond to the first question. Yes, the Holy Communion has been celebrated both yesterday and today. No primates have made any indication that they are not going to communicate. I didn't take notes to see if everybody was there this morning. And let me emphasise, as I have in the past, there could be numerous reasons why a person chooses not to come to the Holy Communion on a particular occasion, not all to do with fractured relationships in the life of the communion. So all I can say is that no one has made any statement or given any indication at this meeting that they're not participating in Holy Communion because of relationships in the communion. David?
Yeah. About 2 years ago, following the consecration of Gene Robinson and the effect this was having on the overall communion, there was the general feeling by many that the communion was heading inevitably towards schism. There is the belief today that somewhat differently, and I've talked to many bishops about this, is that what is happening is not going to be an open schism, but the possibility that parallel jurisdictions will emerge that will absorb the conservatives over time. For example, GAFCON versus Lambeth, ACNA, the new Anglican Church of North America, would certainly be an alternative to both the American and the Canadian churches. In your mind, is that a reality? Is that, obviously, those trains have left the station, they're not going to go back. What are you going to do about it? Certainly, GAFCON represents 75% of all the Anglicans in the world, lay included, but had less bishops. The others had more bishops but less people. Can you see in your mind this kind of parallel development continuing to grow and absorb lots of Anglicans over time?
I find that a very difficult question to answer, David. You're really asking me to speculate about what might be. And I guess there are a range of possibilities. The one you outline is one. I guess another possibility is there could be moves towards reconciliation. I think that the hope of everyone is the latter rather than the former, but it's very difficult to say. George?
From your description of the consensus from the documents brought to this meeting from the Lambeth Conference and your description of some of the discussions earlier today, there seem, I don't know how many of these I've been to, 5, 6, 2 million.
More than me.
There seems to be a change in the ecclesial understanding of the purpose of the primates meeting. 79 was founded as a place for, I think, prayerful conversation, getting to know one another. In 88 and in 98, it was changed to be a group with active purpose, to be given enhanced responsibility in 88, and in 98 to step in and intervene in issues. Now, if I'm hearing you correctly, I'm understanding you to say that those interventions really haven't worked, and the primates have found the limits of their authority, and that they spoke, and they really weren't listened to, and now they're sort of pulling back to a point where their authority is effective. Am I seeing a structural change in the understanding of the primates, how they can work, or am I making up something in my own mind?
I think there are elements of truth in what you're talking about. I wouldn't call it a structural change, though. The primates meeting is a fluid kind of thing, as are, to a large extent, all the instruments of communion, and especially how they work in relationship to each other. The Virginia report, going back over a decade, was an attempt to try to pin down a bit further the roles and responsibilities of the instruments of communion in relation to each other. And none of that has been settled. As I said earlier, the Archbishop of Canterbury encourages the primates and others to continue to reflect on the roles and responsibilities of the instruments and their relationships with each other. So I think you're right, George, to say that the primates, what you're observing among the primates and in the various primates meetings are responses to the context in which they meet. I think it's true to say that in past years there were quite high expectations of the primates meeting, that the primates would do something to fix this situation in the life of the communion. I think the primates on successive occasions have attempted to give advice and provide counsel and propose initiatives which they hoped would be constructive and healing in the life of the church. Some of those have had more success than others. But certainly the primates meeting is a fluid thing and will continue to be, as is the ACC, the shape it needs to take and its responsibilities. We saw changes in the LAMP conference this time, introducing a different kind of tone to the Lambeth conference. And at Lambeth itself, there were recommendations that Lambeth should meet more often, it should just be the diocesans that meet in between. Perhaps the diocesans should meet 5 years down the track, and you know, the Lambeth conference of all bishops. So the instruments are fluid, and explorations are continuing, and the primates meeting is part of that.
I'm going to do a quick follow-up. The one instrument communion you've not mentioned is the Archbishop of Canterbury.
Yes.
The Church of Nigeria has altered its constitution, moving the reference to the Archbishop of Canterbury and inserting a reference to the 39 articles and whatnot. Question is, has the issue of the role of the Archbishop of Canterbury been discussed? And if not, if three are in flux, why is one fixed?
No, I would say the Archbishop of Canterbury is also trying to deal flexibly and creatively and responsively to the situation in the communion. The Lambeth Conference itself in 1998 passed a resolution encouraging the Archbishop of Canterbury to be proactive in relation to some internal situations in provinces. But the Archbishop of Canterbury himself is very sensitive to the limits of his authority and the proper role that he can play in provinces outside his own. The office continues to be central and vital to the life of the communion. And it's him, if I might take issue with one, but I did mention him, he's the one encouraging the exploration of how the instruments of communion relate to one another and encouraging us to reflect and try and pin down.
That's not a sacrosanct or a sacred cow. Everything is in flux.
Well, I'm not aware of any proposals to overturn fundamental characteristics of the office of the Archbishop of Canterbury. I think the See of Canterbury is going to continue to be pivotal and central and vital in the life of the Anglican Communion. If that's the thrust of your question, I don't see any writing on the wall that that's going to change, notwithstanding the alteration that one province made. Last one.
I'll take the last question. You already asked my question, so I have to ask it everyone. You were a...
Those sticks.
Yes, the sticks. You were the kind of the press spokesperson for the last primates meeting and this primates meeting. I remember the first day at the Tanzania primates meeting, you were very uncomfortable and you know things were not going well. Tell me, what's the difference between these two primates meetings that you've seen so far?
I don't share your reflections of the Dar es Salaam meeting. I don't know. I said earlier that people here, there seems to be a lower level of anxiety. The temperature's a bit lower. Not that people are any less concerned about the issues. I don't know what's made the difference, really. Possibly Lambeth, that we're meeting not too long after Lambeth, where bishops, I think one of the things that Lambeth did was really deepen relationships, and people came away from Lambeth deeply committed to the communion. Again, they're my impressions. So maybe what we're experiencing here is part of the outworking of those developments at Lambeth. I don't know.
For the record, who decided what instruments of the communion are instruments of unity in the communion?
Oh, well, they've emerged historically. They used to be called instruments of unity, and then I think was it the Windsor Report itself that encouraged us to refer to them as instruments of communion rather than instruments of unity. So, I mean, the first Lambeth Conference was 1867. The Archbishop of Canterbury goes back to 1986 or 97 or something, 6th century.
I'll take that for the right answer.
So, you know, they've been emerging over time. And whether we've got the final mix right, I mean, in that sense, the Archbishop of Canterbury is here to stay. The Lambeth Conference looks like it's here to stay. They might change form and shape and frequency of meeting. But there is fluidity about the rest. I think one of the things we're grappling with is that we seem to be struggling to respond to some of these issues in a timely way as well as in an effective way, and what changes that invites to the structures that we have is being explored. That's what the exploration is about, I think. The world is a very different place, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years, and we haven't made fundamental changes to our structures, and we don't do things quickly, but we are contemplating how we might better respond given the circumstances in which we now live. You don't mind if I grab some dinner before we...